Welcome. It's wonderful, as always, to sit together and look up and see all of your faces. So, today, on the sixth day of Passover, I'd like to continue the discussion that Reb Moshe started 3 weeks ago on calendar consciousness, bringing our attention to where we are in the Torah cycle, which is reading the book of Vayikra, where we are in the holiday cycle, the sixth day of Passover, and where we are in counting the Omer, the 49-day period of intensive preparation for receiving Torah on Shavuot, which begins on the evening of June 1st. Shavuot being the holiday for remembering and perhaps re-experiencing revelation at Mount Sinai. So while each calendar cycle emphasizes perhaps a different approach to spiritual practice, all share the theme of removing barriers to perceiving the awe of each moment of our lives, clearing the channels of perception, expanding our awareness, and attuning to the fundamental truths about ourselves, our lives, and how we are all connected to each other and to this creation. So first, where are we in the Torah cycle? This week, Shabbat falls on the seventh day of Passover, so we'll take a break from the usual Torah readings to read from Parsha B'Shalach about the crossing of the sea. So, nevertheless, I'd like to ground our awareness in the Torah cycle that places us at this time in the third book of Torah that we started reading 2 weeks ago, the book of Vayikra, which we could translate as the book of being called. It begins with the words, God called to Moses from inside the tent. So how do the stories and rituals of this book help us to attune to what we might be called to do in this life? So just to review, the first book of Torah, Genesis, tells the story of our incarnation into human form and all the struggles and jealousies of family life, which lead to the depths of despair, along with the rise to power and greatness in the story of Joseph and his brothers. In the second book, Exodus, we see how the growing numbers of Israelites in Egypt are experienced as a threat by Pharaoh, leading to their oppression and leading them to cry out, to call to God. Their cries are heard, and God responds by sending a leader who will guide their deliverance from Pharaoh. In order to deliver them to service to God, we often forget the second half of that often repeated line, "Let my people go." It's let my people go so that they may worship me. And the instructions for worship are delivered at Mount Sinai after the deliverance from Mitzrayim. The third book, Vayikra, also called Leviticus because it's the ritual instruction guide for Levites and priests. So this third book, when we read the book of Exodus, we might think, well, wasn't that enough? The Ten Commandments and the many civil laws for the daily life of the community. We might think, well, those are, that's a good start. That's a good set of laws for a foundation for how to live together, and also with the Ten Commandments, how to embody the values that are represented by our sense of the divine. So, why does the book of Vayikra have to introduce such a complicated set of ritual practices for the priests and the Levites for atoning for sin, gratitude for well-being, and many more? So, Aviva Zornberg points out in her commentary on Vayikra, which she calls the hidden order of intimacy. So the order and the rituals for coming close. She points out that the sin of worshiping the golden calf rather than God has left a residual of guilt that interferes with true closeness and connection between the people and God. Korban, the word used to describe these ritual offerings, comes from the root karev, closeness, and the verb form would mean to draw close. These rituals are intended to draw us closer in our connection with Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. So they're an acknowledgement that something has gotten in the way of our close connection to God, and we need a practice. We need to do something to draw us closer. Well, since none of us have worshipped a golden calf, I'm assuming, if that's not too big an assumption, and I don't think any of us are tempted to offer animal sacrifices. So what do these rituals mean to us? Even though we have not worshipped the gold statue, we may be aware of how our thoughts and preoccupations can interfere with being completely present and open to each moment as it unfolds. In our meditation practice, we often use Rabbi Jeff Roth's way of describing God, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, as the unfolding of being in each moment, the unfolding of reality. And of course, this comes from God's communication with Moses, when Moses says, "Who shall I say sent me?" or "What is your name?" God replies, "I will be what I will be." So we can understand that as reality that will be what it will be, and our role in this process is to develop awareness of the emergence of reality. If we understand God to be this unfolding of being in each moment, then we can see how our preoccupations and thoughts interfere with being completely present with that reality. Our minds keep getting caught on something from the past, or something in the future that we're worried about or excited about, something we're reviewing or anticipating. So, how do rituals help? When we fully engage in ritual, we have to align body, mind, intention, and activity. Rituals are not the things that we just feel like doing, like, "Oh, I feel like getting up and making a cup of tea right now." They're not things that are about me and my whimsical wishes. Instead, we have to focus the mind and coordinate our movements according to traditions that people have developed over generations. And we have to take care to do them as prescribed, like choreography in a performance, so that we're aligned with others in our community and with communities across space and time who have valued these particular practices. And when we're completely immersed in doing a ritual as prescribed, our minds are freed from our usual preoccupations and connected with something larger than our own wishes and impulses, connected with communities that spread backward and forward in space and time. So our second calendar cycle is the holiday cycle, as we're in the sixth day of Passover. And we have recently participated once again in the ritual of Seder. The Passover ritual is designed as a way of sharing our experience of being Jewish with the next generation through stories and questions. While study and chants and blessings are important parts of our children's education, they learn the most from what we do and how we are in our lives. So when we teach our children through the Passover Seder, we're not simply communicating with words and stories. We're giving them an experience that they can literally taste and feel. The story of leaving Mitzrayim is something we taste by performing the commandment of eating matzah. At Passover, we're commanded to tell the story as if we ourselves were slaves in Egypt. However, we're also commanded to taste the sweetness of freedom to worship the way we choose. And we take delight in being able to practice these familiar rituals of the Passover service, and our children are able to experience us taking delight in doing that. So the Passover and holiday cycle really emphasize that experiential transmission from generation to generation. You couldn't just read a book about Passover Seder and do it easily that way from just reading. The third aspect of our calendar cycle right now is the counting of the Omer, which starts with day one on the second night of Passover and takes us to day 50, Shavuot, the holiday that celebrates the receiving of Torah at Mount Sinai. So this period between Passover and Shavuot, between liberation and revelation, is a time to prepare ourselves, to open ourselves to receive Torah, to be in closer connection with the unfolding of reality in each moment. So how does the counting of the Omer support that process? This 49-day period is what we might call in Zen or other Buddhist traditions a practice period. A practice period in Buddhist tradition is a time of intensive practice, often between 6 and 12 weeks long. So 7 weeks long is kind of standard. It's guided by study and reflection on a particular set of teachings or values that the whole community has agreed to do. We study and practice with the rest of the community, guided by a teacher. Our Jewish practice period of counting the Omer is guided by the Kabbalistic insights into the seven constellations of the emanations or the manifestations of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh in this human world we live in. We have other practice periods, of course, the time between Tisha B'Av and the High Holidays would be another practice period. And indeed, there's a way of seeing this whole 120 days until Yom Kippur as being part of a larger practice period. So the manifestations, of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh in this world are represented in the Kabbalistic organization of the Sefirot. And each week we focus on one psycho-spiritual experience. This week is Chesed, and each day offers a new step on the journey. So I'll share I will share, as soon as I find the right button here, I'll share our picture of the spheroid. Okay, can everybody see this? Yeah. Okay, good. So we start on this row, Chesed Gvura. These higher spherot are not included. Keter, the crown, these are all kind of more in a way, cognitive understanding, and these are more experiential and emotional. The seven that we're going to be focusing on and studying these 7 weeks. And you can see we're starting first week with Chesed. And on the right side are the expansive ones, and on the left side are the boundaried ones. So Chesed, loving kindness, is expansive, giving, generous. Gevurah, which will be next week, is boundaries, clarity. It's balances Chesed, and between the two, Tiferet is a balancing of the expansive and the boundaried and controlled. And if you practice at TBC, you know on the right side we have the quilt that represents on the right side different aspects of Chesed, and on the left side the aspects of Gevurah. So Chesed, we see a picture of Moses being put in the water and picked up by Pharaoh's daughter, and that would be a symbol of both giving baby Moses, trusting the river, and Pharaoh's daughter having the loving kindness to save and raise the baby. So, Reb Moshe has described these spherot as constellations of experiences and values, because none of them seem to reflect one thing or to be easily explained in a very rational way. And when we practice in these 7 weeks, so this week is Chesed all week long, but the 7 days are Chesed Shebechesed, Gevurah Shebechesed, Tiferet Shebechesed, Netzach Shebechesed, Netzach Shebechesed, and today is Hod Shebechesed. Okay, so 7 weeks for the seven spherot, and each day is represented by one aspect of that sphera as it's informed by the others. Okay. So I'm going to stop the share here. So these 7 weeks of the Omer represent a period of spiritual growth and maturation from Passover to Shavuot, from narrowness and constriction represented by Mitzrayim to the expansive state represented by the Sinai wilderness. And this explanation I'm quoting from a description of a course that's being given now through the Institute of Jewish Spirituality. The IJS website had this nice description, and it reads, according to the Jewish mystical tradition, each of the 7 weeks is informed by and infused with a spiritual quality derived from the mystical spherot, lenses to help us channel, focus, and reveal the light of consciousness. So each year for guidance, we also turn to the Chabad website, where Simon Jacobson's descriptions of the Omer describe practices week to week and day to day. So week one that we're in now, Hesed, he writes, love is the single most powerful and necessary component in life. Love is the origin and foundation of all human interactions. It is both giving and receiving. It allows us to reach above and beyond ourselves, to experience another person, and to allow that person to experience us. It is the tool by which we learn to experience the highest reality, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. In a single word, love is transcendence. So here we are, day five, which is Chod Shebechesed. And of course, every Friday will be Chod this Passover. Now, Chod is a constellation of qualities that includes, if we translate the word Chod, splendor, thanksgiving, glory, awe, and humility. And Rabbi Jacobson focuses on the aspect of humility in love for today. And he writes, you can often get locked in love and be unable to forgive your beloved or to bend or compromise your position. Chod introduces the aspect of humility in love, the ability to rise above yourself and forgive. In other words, I would say, to not have to be right in an argument, and that just for the sake of love, you might not need to prove that you're right, even if you're convinced that you're right. It's valuing, I would say in psychological terms, we would call this putting in that moment the value of the connection higher than the value of I need to assert my own voice right now. And all relationships have this kind of dialectic, we'd say, that we both yearn for closeness, but we also need to assert ourselves and get our own needs met and have our own agenda honored. And we're always balancing that. So Rabbi Jacobson's question for the day is, can you reconcile with a loved one you have quarreled with? Not to have to get the other person to agree you're right, even if you are right, okay? So each day will encourage us to reflect on a different aspect of this emanation. And you can easily go to the Chabad website and search for Omer Insights and find Rabbi Simon Jacobson's words. So just to review, our calendar offers us at least these three options for reflection and practice at this moment in time. We're in the book of Vayikra, so we can reflect on what are we called to do in this life? What is our calling? And we can use ritual to refine our ability to be present and close to reality unfolding in each moment. And second, we're in the holiday of Passover, of re-experiencing the passage from narrow-mindedness to spacious awareness, the movement from Mitzrayim into the wilderness. And in the wilderness, it's more open, but we may also feel lost, confused. And Passover is a holiday that launches us into freedom with all its complex qualities. But it's also freedom to serve God. So the third practice from our calendar is the practice period of counting the Omer, a chance to study, reflect, and prepare together along with other Jewish communities throughout space and time on this path from constriction to expansive awareness. So we'll have some time to reflect on whether any of these aspects of calendar consciousness inform our current state of being.